right, let's do it. Jason Fitz joining us now from Yahoo Sports, Raider Nation's Grammy winner, Juilliard grad, UNLV child prodigy. He's here with us on Tuesdays at this time. Jason, good morning to you. All right, listen, just in the aftermath of that loss to the Chargers, you noted up on X, all right, Raiders unable to convert on short yardage situations, 4 of 13 overall on second and short and third and short. How do you start rectifying that adjustment?
I know that there was obviously not the final five that we thought we would have up front, but if we're being honest, it wasn't the group that we wanted to see from the outset. Now, part of that's going to get better over the time, over the course of the next few weeks, but that's what made me really nervous, guys. Like, I think, you know, this offense is only going to be able to hum if they can get forward momentum. And, you know, for all the conversation about punting on fourth and one and why that's not what you're supposed to do, I had this argument with Frank Schwab on, you know, inside coverage on Sunday night. You know, I understand that the analytics say don't ever punt in plus punt territory. It's the first time it's been done since 2016 in that situation. I get all of that. The analytics didn't watch second and two, third and two, fourth and one, third and two, fourth. I mean, we saw it over and over and over again. And so, like, I understand everybody sitting there yelling, you got to go for it. But also, do you? Because if it hasn't worked all game long, at some point you're Charlie Brown. They couldn't get a surge. And something I talk about a lot in college football particularly is who moves the line of scrimmage at the snap of the ball. And the weirdest part about this game is, frankly, neither team moved the line of scrimmage on either side. It just felt like the snap of the ball meant they were going to be right there. And the Raiders got to figure that out. They got to figure that out quickly. They tried everything. I think the run game design, by the way, was good. I thought Luke Getsy had a lot of different types of runs in there, a lot of different ways to run the football, but it did not work. So the guys are going to have to get better up front for those conversions to start to happen. And this offense can't hum if that doesn't start to happen.
Jason, I think what we saw on Sunday was an example of how razor thin the margin of error is for the Raiders and how well-defined their path to victory is. There's a roadmap that they have to follow, some things that they have to do, and some things that they cannot do. Otherwise, the whole thing will blow up in their face, as it did on Sunday. Knowing that, and knowing that margin of error is as thin as it is, do you remain hopeful that there's still a path to go get 9 or 10 wins? We're talking about realistic expectations this year, and I know that's hard sometimes for a fan base to accept or swallow, but sometimes it is what it is. What are your healthy and realistic expectations, having seen what you saw on Sunday?
Well, look, my expectation coming into the season, I said, was probably 7 or 8 wins. I think 9 or 10 is probably a little more aggressive. Did I see anything yesterday that changed my expectations? No. I can't say this loud enough. This team is going to win games it shouldn't and lose games it shouldn't across the course of this year because of the way they're built. That defense played with the fire of the gods. And yeah. I know that they gave up a couple of huge runs. That's going to happen when you are basically running, you know, the NFL equivalent of engage all. Like we saw what that defensive line was doing over and over and over again just to try and disrupt the game. When that is, when you put everything on, there are going to be some times that things pop. That's inevitable. I didn't see anything that changed my expectation. I saw a team that missed a field goal that doesn't usually miss a field goal, that had two turnovers that were absolutely inexcusable, and a turnover on downs that was in the game with 2.5 minutes to go. That's the way this whole season, like, this is going to be a season that gives us all gray hair because the offense is going to have to be methodical, and that's okay. Like, that's just the way that this offense is built. So I didn't see anything that changed my expectation. And frankly, if we're being real here, I think they're about to take on one of the 3 or 4 best teams in the league in Baltimore. Baltimore didn't look like it Thursday night. I think they will on Sunday. I think this is a tough open to the season. All of it is about growth. Do you get where you need to be? So I'm not panicked yet because, frankly, coming into the season, if you'd asked me, well, what do you expect against the Chargers? I would have told you I expected a split. All right, they lost the first game. So you got to get the second one out of them. These catastrophic reactions, like, guys, if you have to bet your house, is anybody going to bet their house that New England is better than Cincinnati? And this happens every year with the Bengals. Like, the Bengals start slow every year, and then we freak out about it. The Bills last year were left for dead midway through the season, and then all they did was just destroy it through the back half of the season. Is that ideal? No, we'd all love to be 1-0, but is being 0-1 changing my expectations for the season? No, I still think that this is a 7 or 8 win football team. Mm-hmm.
Jason, I want to ask you about Gardner Minshew in particular, and as egregious as that fumble at the end of the first half was, what did you see out of him in terms of his decision-making, his time in the pocket, And just your overall, I guess, evaluation of what you saw out of 15.
Yeah, I thought there were really good moments getting the ball out of his hand quickly, and I thought he did a really nice job climbing the pocket. What has to happen in the evolution, though, of the climb is that I feel like I'm Miley Cyrus. It's a climb. As he climbs up the pocket, he's got to keep his eyes looking for Devontae. Because I saw a couple of them on the replay. I went back and watched the all 22. When he starts to climb the pocket, Devontae is open for him eight yards down the field. The question is, how do you climb and keep your eyes downfield to find your best player on offense? That I think that will come with time, with rhythm, with reps, and with film. But realistically, Gardner wasn't like the reason they lost this football game. I mean, Gardner's not Mahomes, right? So, and saying climb the pocket and fling the football is a beautiful concept, but we also saw Will Levis cost the Titans a game trying to do the exact same thing. So there's a fine line. I acknowledge that, but I think Gardner got 80% of what they wanted him to do by staying mobile. I would like to see him keep his eyes down, feel better when he climbs the pocket. And I would like to see Getsy have more designed rollouts, frankly. I was a little surprised that everything stayed right in front of him. I wonder if that was maybe a small statement to the fact that they knew that the offensive line wasn't going to be quite in sync yet, because I expected to see more right rolls, more opportunities to really test the right side of that line and kind of roll yourself out and see guys get open. We didn't see a lot of that. That's a lot of what Justin Fields did. So I think we're going to see more of that evolve in the course of the next few weeks.
It's Jason Fitz, Yahoo Sports, with the awesome College Football Power Hour, as well as inside coverage with Frank Schwab here on Raider Nation Radio. All right, so you brought up Devontae Adams. What do you think his patient level is with this offense, and what is your patience level with Gardner Minshew?
I think the absolute worst-case scenario for the Raiders this season is a revolving door quarterback. Like, if you want to ask what's one thing that we would see that would make me think this season is done, that is a couple of games of Gardner, couple of games of Aiden, couple of games of Gardner. That doesn't win. That doesn't win for anybody, right? So, you know, to me, the level of patience with this offense we all need to have is it needs to grow together. The only situation that I think even gives the Raiders an outside chance at the playoffs from this point moving forward is Gardner Minshew developing a little bit better in some of this and getting a little bit better rapport. Because if we end up revolving door, I think this season's done. So, you know, for Devontae, he's got to go out and just continue to do what he does, right? And so that's going to be interesting against the Baltimore Ravens defense that is not as good as it was last year because they lost a great coordinator and they lost some players on the defensive side of the ball. Devontae's just got to keep getting open, and then he's got to keep getting in Gardner's ear. And we saw this last year. Like, it took Jimmy a minute. It took Aiden a minute. Everybody's got to learn that when Devontae's covered, he's not covered. Like, that same thing's going to have to happen with Gardner. They didn't get as many reps in the preseason, too. I think those are important things. So I think Devontae's going to have a little more patience than we all think because, frankly, the whole world keeps speaking for Devontae about what he wants and where he really wants to play. And then every time he steps in front of a microphone, he says, nope, that's not true. Like, at what point do we just start to take the man for his word and just stop presuming that he's going to, you know, pitch a fit and want out of town if things don't start well? So I think Devontae, by the way, clearly, even if this season goes off the rails, I cannot say this loud enough, I think even if the Raiders win three games, Devontae Adams is going to be a Raider in week 18. I believe that. I don't believe that the Raiders would get anything in trade value that would make it worth getting rid of somebody that means as much to the organization as he does. I think Devontae also knows that. So level of patience changes when you know that, hey, this is the way life's going to be this year. And, you know, you can figure it out for next year. I don't think he's going anywhere. I don't think that there's going to be a big blow up other than the usual blow up that comes from a wide receiver that wants and deserves the ball on every play.
Well, he is going to be on the Kay Adams Show this morning. I think it's starting right now at 8 a.m. He and CD Lamb are going to be the featured guests with Kay Adams, and we're big Kay Adams' fans. What do you think his message is going to be today after that loss?
I think his message is going to be pretty blunt because he's Devontae. It's going to be, we need to get better. We need to execute better. I need to get the ball more. I think all of those things. And then, you know, Jets fans like Greeny are going to use it on Get Up tomorrow as a reason why he's going to go to the Jets. And, like, this is the asinine sports cycle that's happening right now. Like, the reason people speak for Devontae is because, to them, they want to see Devontae on a Super Bowl champion. And I get that. Like, that would be appealing if I was a Jets fan, too, or if I was a fan of any other team that needed to figure it out. But, you know, his message is going to be blunt because that's what he does. But his message is also just going to be, hey, we need to get better. We've never seen Devontae come out and not be honest. But we also, I would be stunned if he comes out and says anything other than Raider for life.
Jason, as we kind of make our pivot now towards week two and another Harbaugh, another road game, this one in Baltimore, what do you see the path of victory for the Silver and Black being, and what does that route look like?
I think the Ravens have the opportunity to have the toughest offense in the NFL outside of Philly to defend. They can beat you at absolutely every level. So the route, the way to victory here is to make sure that you are, I mean, I know Lamar's not practicing today. We're going to presume Lamar plays, right? You got to figure out how to keep the running game in check all the way across the board. They didn't use Derrick Henry as much in week one as I thought they would. I think that will adjust a little bit, especially against this defensive line. They're going to just try and run the football. The Ravens' offensive line did not hold up well against the pass rush at all from Kansas City. We all saw that. So the Raiders can feast if they start to pass. You're going to need a big game from the safeties defensively too, because Isaiah Likely is truly the star there. So, and I think Zay Flowers is going to start running deeper and deeper routes as the season goes on. So it's going to take a lot of discipline to take on this Ravens defense. When it comes to attacking the Ravens, Raiders offense attacking the Ravens defense, going to have to run the football. And that just didn't happen. That didn't happen. You're going to have to run the football if you want to be able to control this game at all. So I think it's a tough task going to Baltimore on an early game, taking on a team that by the end of the year, I think is a Super Bowl contender, that has a two-time MVP at quarterback and an MVP caliber running back and weapons all over the offensive side of the ball. Like, this is, I'm making it sound daunting because it is daunting, right? But I also think that there's some peace in accepting, like, hey, this Raiders season is not going to be defined in the first 2 weeks. It's not going to be defined in the first 3 weeks. It's going to be defined by the growth that happens every single week. So, you know, would we all feel better going in 1-0 instead of 0-1? Yeah, but the only way you're going to beat the Ravens is, man, you are going to have to absolutely pound them. Your defensive line is going to have to absolutely annihilate their offensive line throughout the course of the game. I think the Raiders have the hogs to do this. I think it's a close game. I just think asking the Raiders to win in Baltimore against that team coming off, you know, an embarrassing game for them and extra rest for them is a tall task.
Jason Fitz, we absolutely love your work, man. Thank you for coming on here on this Tuesday. We look forward to talking again next week.
Can't wait, boys. Sky is not falling. Just remember that. The sky is not falling. Appreciate you, boys.
Thank you for the reassurance. Thank you, Jason, at Jason Fitz on X. And go check out the Power Hour college football podcast he's doing up on Yahoo. It's fantastic stuff. And, you know, I like what he said, especially when you notice how Devontae is noticing when Minshew is climbing the pocket because the ball's not there. He is totally turning his head around and going towards the ball.
I agree. Let me ask you guys a question. He said the sky's not falling, which I agree with.
A punch of positivity,
and
that was.
Because I think what Sunday showed was, okay, this is what you can't do. This is what you're going to have to do, which there's clarity. But when you say your expectations are 7 to 8 wins, is that not sky falling to Raider Nation? I mean, if that's what you're realistically expecting, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, isn't that in and of itself, you're telling me that there's no chance of the playoffs? Isn't that the definition of the sky is falling? Like, there's really, if you're saying that that's what your expectation is, you know what I'm saying?
Well, he was not surprised by the outcome on Sunday. So at the same time, I think his expectations were consistent throughout 7 to 8 wins.
Yeah, which that's, you know, that's it's a quick, a swift kick to the gut if you're a Raider fan right now. Not intentionally by Jason, I'm not saying that, but just the realization that this might be a 7 or 8 win team is kind of a kick to the butt, kick to the gut to start a season, because you want more than that. You want to be in the playoffs. You want to win 10 games. You want to believe that that's possible.
And he's talking to fans. Like, he's talking, he's like, when he's saying the sky is not falling to
right.
The fans, right? That's,
there's still a chance to win 7 or 8 games.
So that's tough because, you know, 7 or 8 games puts you right back in that purgatory of, you know, you're probably the first ones out of the postseason and you're far enough away in when the NFL draft comes along. And I know nobody wants to be talking about the NFL draft following week one of the NFL season, but the Raiders were always going to be looking at the NFL draft regardless of what happens this season.
I agree.
For a quarterback, mm-hmm. No matter what. Great season, bad season.
Right.
They were always going to be looking for a quarterback come April next year. So, you know, again, 7-8 wins, that's tough.
Right.
That's not ideal one way or another. Like, regardless of what you're hoping for this team, that's not ideal one way or another. It's not great if you're the Raiders, and it's not great if you're the fans. So, yeah, that's not ideal. But when you talk about the path. the path. Maybe we need to clip that, Clay. Maybe we need to create a path.
The path
to a successful season. Is it still there? Sure. The Raiders have a lot of growth that they need to make up between now and that next game, because the competition steps up in a giant way. And when you look at what do the Ravens do? Well, they do everything pretty damn good, right? But the issue for me is when you were facing the Chargers, there's two teams trying to establish identity, trying to run the ball, trying to win the point of attack in the trenches. The Raiders lost that battle.
Mm-hmm.
The Ravens do it as good, if not better, than 98% of the teams. After seeing what San Francisco did last night, you know, it's probably them and San Francisco in terms of pushing the point of attack, winning in the trenches, and winning that battle.
Yeah, and I think the Chargers are going to
be up there, but the Ravens
those
do
two
it,
young tackles.
Right, but the Ravens do it in a different way as well. They can line up and push you back, or they can get exotic with it with Lamar and being able to run around and kind of different the way they run the ball. The Raiders defense, as good as they looked early, are going to have a giant task ahead of them on Sunday in Baltimore.
You bring up a good point, because just to go back really quickly to the Chargers, because that's a team, obviously, that the Raiders are going to have to contend with here this year and moving forward. Knowing that Greg Roman is on the scene, Herbert gets fully healthy, and there probably was some lingering effects from his foot injury. And that was Lamar Jackson's, coordinator in Baltimore. Yeah. He was Kaepernick's coordinator in San Francisco. Do you think that we're going to see more of that, more of the little exotic stuff that
100%.
Yeah. It was a watered down Justin Herbert on Sunday.
100%. I mean, without question.
He is a runner. He can run. You go back to his Oregon days, that's what that's what he's suited to do.
Another example of a running quarterback.
Yeah.
Justin Herbert is a quarterback who can run.
And they protected him on Sunday. They didn't ask him to do any of that on Sunday.
Yeah,
directly,
a lot of quick stuff. Again, Eric Allen was on the program yesterday. He was really impressed, as was I. But obviously I trust him way more than my eyes when it comes to the DBs and the secondary. He really liked what he saw out of the Raiders secondary,
which was
fantastic. Mm-hmm. Again, we talk about building blocks.
Yeah.
That's a big one. I know, you know, the Jack Jones, Josh Palmer stuff is going to kind of overshadow anything that happened with the secondary.
I'd be surprised if there was a suspension.
Yeah, Pelissero basically said no suspensions coming. Fines likely, but Ja'Corin Bennett, I thought, looked really,
very
really
much.
Good. Another building block, the tackling from that defensive backfield, I thought was phenomenal. Robert Spillane, we haven't talked about him, but he was a heat-seeking missile kind of
so
all day.
Was Epps. Yep.
I know we're going to talk more about the missed run fits that he and Diablo had.
Clean it up.
I mean, they were good. So what I'm saying is, when we talk about building blocks and we know the Ravens are going to run the ball, and Derrick Henry wasn't used a ton week one. He wasn't really showcased a lot. I don't know how much that is by design.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is something we have to talk about. Ravens fans, I saw this on Twitter yesterday because I was following what Harbaugh was going to say about Lamar Jackson, by the way, missing practice. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. Don't know the exact reason why. We'll find out tomorrow when the injury report comes out, if he's dealing with something. But, you know, there were some questions about Derrick Henry and his usage against the Kansas City Chiefs. And Jim Harbaugh said, and I totally agree with him, we didn't bring him in, Derrick Henry in, to give him the ball 30 times a game. And
it's not Tennessee.
Fans were going nuts. Like, what are you talking about? Like, did anyone really expect that Derrick Henry at this stage of his career was going to be this major workhorse? There's a reason why the Tennessee Titans kind of moved on from him. He's not that Derrick Henry anymore. So I think it's realistic how Jim Harbaugh was describing it. And I don't know if you got your hopes up way too high if you thought that Derrick Henry was going to be this 28 to 30 carry guy anymore. I think those days are over.
Coming up next, we'll talk to comedian and impressionist funny man Joey Molinaro. He'll join us at 8:30. We'll also continue to get your text up online at 702-365-9200, thoughtfully provided by the Dollar Loan Center.
Absolutely. And, hey, I want to remind everybody, I know we're a week or we're over a week away from the Raiders' home opener against the Carolina Panthers, but we are throwing a night before rally over at Crust and Rue. It's a beautiful pizzeria, and they've partnered up with Dos Catas Tequila. It's over in Town Square. We'll be there from 5 to whenever. We're going to try to get there early enough to watch the national ESPN college football game. So 5 to whenever. Crust and Rue over at the Town Square. It's right across the street, actually, from Rockstar. So all of our regulars will remember that. It's a great new pizzeria, but it's really a fantastic pizzeria. Great desserts, great drinks, great atmosphere, and of course, they're proud partners of Dos Catas Tequila.
It's the Morning Tailgate, Raider Nation Radio. Let's continue the conversation. 702-365-9200. Follow us on the X at Vince Sapienza, at Vinny Bonsignor, at Clay Baker Radio. And as we are having this discussion on a Tuesday following week one, guys are resetting, guys are recalibrating physically, mentally, getting set for week two of the NFL season. And we are starting to remove the cloud that is over the head of the silver and black as we try to push forward and move on to week two. So, Vinny, I want to ask you, when we talk about building blocks, what is one thing you saw on Sunday in LA that gives you hope, regardless of how much hope that carries through the season in terms of wins and losses? I want to know, what is something you saw Sunday, one thing that can carry over into week two, that says, okay, that can be a foundational piece?
The defense, without question. There's not much I saw offensively that gives me a whole lot of hope that's going to carry over from one week to the next. I think you're going to have to make do offensively to some extent. But, yeah, for sure, I think this defense is going to be one of the better defenses in this league.
All right, let's pivot our attention to Joey Molinaro, who joins us right now up online at Joey Molinaro, up on X and on Instagram. The great These Guys podcast on YouTube and everywhere you get podcasts. Comedian, impressionist. It's absolutely an honor to have you on, Joey. Thank you for joining us. Hey, you know what? You know, here's the thing. Like, every time we get a chance to go and listen to certain guys, you know, in sports and like the sports media world, it almost seems like that's the last vestige of distinctive voices, because we've heard how, you know, over the years, how comedians and impressionists, they've been able to go to like the TV or movie world to find distinctive voices to make, you know, great mimicry. But you know what? You can't tell the difference between Brad Pitt and George Clooney. But you know what? In the sports world, you do a fantastic job of defining the differences between guys like Colin Cowherd and Chris Collinsworth. And it's awesome to see you work this involvement. How important is it to you to like go and continue to practice on stuff like this, especially with the NFL back and when you get Sunday Night Football and Chris Collinsworth sounds like he's just your smart ass older brother talking down at you?
Yeah, dude. Well, thanks for having me, guys. Good morning to everybody out there in Vegas.
Good morning.
Yeah, dude. It's my version of the film room. It's you know how all these quarterbacks and everybody get in there and they watch the defense and they break down the tape and the film. That's what I do. Like on Sunday Night Football, like you said, like I'm sitting there. That's my film for the week. So
awesome.
It's all good fun, man. And yeah, just like trying to find, you know, anybody new, hopefully that I can try to you know, get down and have some fun with.
Well, I've actually been thinking about you more often than not, or more often than usual, because Nick Saban, who you brilliantly have captured, is giving us more Nick Saban than we've ever heard before. Now as part of ESPN's game day crew for college football. How do you think that Nick Saban is doing on this new stage that he's been provided?
Dude, it's so awesome, isn't it? I mean, because I thought that Coach Saban was going to be one of those that I didn't think he was ever going to leave the sideline. I thought that they were just going to bury him 6 feet under on the sideline with the tombstone on Alabama's sideline and just be done with it. if he ever even, you know, went at all. I thought he was going to be like the Emperor from Star Wars and just like keep continuing to live. But he finally decided to retire, and I thought he was going to be one of those that like we just weren't going to hear from him. You know, I thought he was going to be like every 5 years maybe he'd pop in at a national championship and he'd be like, oh, cool, Coach Saban. And other than that, he'd just be out on his boat. But, hey, he's taking this and running with it. And I think the real fun part is the juxtaposition between McAfee and Saban sitting side by side together on the desk every Saturday. That's been a blast.
Well, first things first, you're supposed to say spoiler alert when you're talking Star Wars and the Emperor. Man, haven't had time to watch it. Take it easy. It's only been,
it's been 5 years.
That's not enough time.
5 years? Come on, man. We've had a pandemic. You can't catch up through all that. Let's go.
Joey, have you seen my queue on the flicks? It is jam-packed. Anyways, when you look at like that game day, I'm curious, like, does your mind start to turn? Because I've heard you and read different things where you're talking about, like, you try and create your own Saturday Night Live. You try and create your own skits as you're doing different things, whether it's impression or comedy. You look at the college game day. Do you see yourself doing a full-on, like, Nutty Professor type thing where you're just each guy down and having your own conversation?
Totally. I don't, you know, maybe you fellas out there in Vegas can win some big money and help me with some production costs that would be necessary for me to do that the right way.
Sure.
But Clay's good for it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like you said, like I just tried to every week, especially during football season, because I think with the routine of having it, you know, Thursday through Sunday, and you can kind of get everybody in the same routine, I try to just stay as topical as possible. So I'm always watching Saturday morning if there's something that pops up, like McAfee ripping his shirt off a couple weeks ago and Saban freaking out about that. Or like I mentioned, Sunday Night Football or Thursday Night Football with Michaels or any of it. But it doesn't just have to be football. Like, I just try to stay as topical as possible, put something out there that's relevant for people to enjoy, and we all just have a grand old time together on what is typically a pretty toxic, horrible place, and that's the internet.
Hate to put you on the spot, but I'm going to put you on the spot because I was thinking about Nick Saban, which I almost feel it's inevitable that that somehow, some way, they're going to get out to Ole Miss. And they're going to do a game day there for a big game. And that would mean that Lane Kiffin, his former offensive coordinator, is going to be on the set with them. And Nick's going to have to interview Lane Kiffin. And I'm curious how you think that that would go with Nick Saban interviewing Lane Kiffin in that setting.
Well, Lane, everybody's real high about you right now. Everybody loves you. But just remember who your daddy is. I'm the one who brought you back and gave you a job. I gave you a new life. I'm your God. You're my Jesus. I resurrected you. So you owe me everything. Us being here is because of me, not because of you, son. So just remember where he came from and who your daddy is.
That's awesome.
Oh, that is so good. Speaker Joey Molinaro here with us on the Morning Tailgate. Follow him on X or Instagram, Joey Molinaro, as well as get the podcast. These guys does a fantastic job, as well as up on YouTube. And, you know, here's that. You know, that's a thing, like, you know, because you're a crazy LSU fan. And were you ever surprised that Ed Orgeron was never able to make that jump into the broadcasting booth, or at least be that kind of like comic relief that's up on the sidelines or in a panel somewhere?
Well, brother, it's really important in these jobs, as you guys know. You do it every day for one, people to be able to understand what the hell you're saying.
Well,
so I think that's one requirement where my man Coach O would, you know, he would bring a lot of joy to college football fans who are in on the gig, right? But yeah. I think if like my mom was sitting there tuning in, or my mother-in-law was sitting there tuning in, they'd be like, why is this man on my TV when not even the closed captioning knows what is coming out of his mouth? But I do miss Coach O a lot. I have gotten to know him a little bit, meet him a few times. And I don't really know what he's doing. He kind of took the Saban route. It's funny, like you mentioned, like you think that Saban would have gone the Coach O route and disappeared, and Coach O would have gone the Saban route and been all over TV and doing that. And we have a little bit of a weird Twilight Zone 180 here going on. But, yeah, my favorite thing about Coach O is every time that I've been able to be around him, which is a handful of times now, he just says to me,
Hey, man, I love it in my fucking neck, man. I love it in my whole Simon, man. People go on Simon Rollins. I love it.
So if you couldn't understand what you probably can, he loves when I make fun of Nick Saban. And so we have a good bond over that.
All I heard was, I love it.
Well, that's all I heard. I had a former LSU tight end tell me, he goes, I didn't understand a word he said, but he got his point across. That's the thing about Coach O. It doesn't, it's get the point. Does he? Do you get the point? And generally speaking, he did. That's for sure.
Joey, I'm... Go ahead.
Well, sorry. There's that one clip. I don't know if you guys saw this one clip a few years ago. It was when he was like really on top of LSU, and he was at like a booster dinner, like a donor dinner, and he's giving a speech. And I mean, when I tell you that even somebody like me who impersonates him, who like can kind of understand what he's saying, you could not understand it, but just everybody in the room, all these boosters, just ended up cracking up laughing because they were in such good graces with Coach O at the time, which now it's changed immensely down there anyways. But they paid him $17 million to walk out the door. So he's all good. But, yeah, sorry, I interrupted
you. It's amazing how much you'll understand from him when you're like three hurricanes in to the booster dinner. It all makes sense once you've had about three hurricanes.
Sure. Sure. Joe, yeah, sorry, I interrupted your question.
No, you're good. I'm curious, your first impression, like, when was it, who was it, and when you go back to that time, do you continue to refine impressions, and how different does it sound from the first time you think you had it to when you go back and somebody asks you, oh, hey, do a Saban, do a Collinsworth?
Totally, yeah. My first one that did pretty well was Andrew Luck. And I don't know if you guys remember him or not.
You can remind us.
Wow.
just having a good time talking to my guys in Vegas. I don't make it out there very much because I got two young babies. But I do have a good time in Vegas. But I don't go out there very much, no.
Luck was one of my first ones, and it did well, especially around here. It kind of picked up nationally a little bit. And then he decided to become a recluse and retire. And so I had to move on from that one, obviously. And then Saban was the one on Thanksgiving of 2019 that really just connected with people and has ever since. And that was the one that, like, took me from, like, 1,000 followers online to, like, 20,000 followers in, like, a day time frame. So that was the first one. And to your point about refining, yeah, for sure. Like, even if it's not ones that I want to try to capture that are new. There's even my ones that people request the most that, like, I go back, and there's different versions of them too, right? Like, with Saban, like I did earlier, you have the one where he's kind of getting worked up and he raises his voice a little bit. And then you have the one on game day where he's a little more refined and he's a little more soft-spoken and he's using his hands a little bit more. And he's showing his game film. You know, and like Collinsworth, he's the same thing. Like when he's broadcasting, his voice goes a little bit higher. But if you interview Collinsworth or you capture him in like a regular setting, he's just more down here relaxing and having a good time. You know, he's very gravelly and he's just laid back like he's had four Coronas and is enjoying his time on a Sunday evening. Those kind of things are the difference, and that I try to pick up on and use in different scenarios. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think Eddie Murphy said it, that, like, comedy is just the art of observation, and that applies heavily to trying to impersonate people, involve them in your sketches. So I'm constantly, you know, people give me a hard time in my life even, because that's how I started out when I was a kid, is, you know, coaches, teachers, priests. Mm. I went to Catholic school, right? So I make fun of all these people. And so I've always just been in the art of like picking up on people's tendencies, their mannerisms, how they hit certain words. And so I'm kind of a freak in that way, but it's a lot of fun.
Is Tom Brady somebody that, that you maybe have your eye on a little bit now that he's in the booth and we're going to hear him talk and explain and do everything that you do as a color analyst? Is he somebody that, that you're going to maybe try to zero in on?
That's so funny you said that. It's a great question. Because literally, as I was driving over to a coffee shop because I got two little kids at home and my wife stays at home with them. So sometimes when I need to do work, I go to a coffee shop and lock in that way. But as I was driving, this is insane. This is my life. But like as I was driving to the coffee shop, I'm literally talking to myself in my car, trying to get Tom Brady down or just start the process of working on it. So yes, I'm trying. But that's another thing that, you know, people kind of a common misconception, if you will, and I'll get this on Cameo or whatnot when people have different requests, or unfortunately at like a bar at like 1 a.m. sometimes people will come up to me and
of
be
course.
Like, give me a George Bush. I'm like, brother, I don't know, dude, George Bush. I don't know where you're getting that from with this request. Like, sometimes people just think that like, oh, that guy does impressions. If I want him to do, Scooby-Doo, he could do it, right? Like, anything that I bring up, he can do it because he does impressions. That's just not the case. Like, there's ones, you know, you try to do the ones that you can, but there's just some that, like, you try, and for whatever reason, like, I'm just not talented enough to crack it, you know? Like, I've been trying to get Peyton Manning for years. I just can't do it.
Mm.
But Tom Brady is certainly one that, yeah, like, I'm going to go back, and I have his – I have his hits up on YouTube right now to where I'm going back and listening and watching the game again and watching his hit on Fox and just trying to pick up on those things and how I could possibly get him down, because he's such a topic of mine right now this fall with him being on TV. And so I know that if he's one that I could get down, it'd be big.
Joey Molinaro here with us. Go up on Instagram, X, Joey Molinaro, especially on Instagram, where you could see the comedian stylings, the ability, the great sketch writing that you do, where you're doing every voice of The Office, every voice on Seinfeld. It's fantastic what you're doing, man, and we really appreciate you making time. In fact, with the Steelers and Raiders coming up down the road, we look forward to seeing some Steelers Raiders stuff that you'll come out with, and maybe doing some Tomlin as well, because I know you're big in the golden black.
Yes, big in the golden black, and I was out at a bachelor party in Vegas last September and was driving by that crazy Death Star of a stadium you guys got, and it looks like a hell of a time, so hope to make it out there for that, and you guys have been great, man. I really appreciate you having me on and giving me the time. Thanks so much.
These guys pod. Thank you, Joey. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, brother.
Thanks,
keep
Joey.
Up the great work.
Joey's done.
Yeah.
Hang out.
So, he can do George Bush, or he needs to learn George Bush, because next time we talk to him, yeah. I'm going to ask him. And then second, it sounds like he retired Andrew Luck. That was so spot on that after he said he nailed it, he went into a recluse mode. So,
and how disappointing that is, because it's like, boy, you got something down and you feel like you got like longevity with this bad boy.
Are you sure retirement? Or
that was fantastic.
A little hasty on that.
But if he gets Tom Brady down, that could be his retirement ticket where he's just like, I'm the go-to Tom Brady voice.
Yeah, you know, and if I was, you know, just having a regular conversation with him, I do wonder how feasible, how doable that is. Tom Brady has a very unique kind of a voice. It's kind of high-pitched. There's not a lot of baritone. I think when you're doing impersonations, those baritone voices are probably a little bit easier to riff off of. I don't know that Tom Brady.
And he
Brady
says he's been trying to do Peyton forever, and he hasn't just been able to nail. Because, you know, guys like that, if you're going to do it, you have to.
Of course.
It has to. There's a certain, it's got to be
you cannot,
right?
So,
and can you tell Peyton's voice from anyone else? I'd like, how distinctive is it?
I think
it's pretty distinctive. So
he's been on so many commercials. Like, when you hear his voice, you know that it's Peyton. You don't have even have to see
and
Peyton.
His mannerisms. Yeah. Like, I think that helps. Like the way he kind of like
the,
you know,
half goofy, half
That was great. That was a fantastic. I mean, his four coronas deep, Chris Collinsworth was amazing.
When you see him doing it, he actually has the face structure and does the mannerisms, and maybe that's the genesis of getting it down great.
Right.
But he actually looks like Chris Collinsworth. Yes. His face morphs into that. Hey, we'll take a break, and coming up next, we're going into more sound for Christian Wilkins, Antonio Pierce, and read your text up on the text line 702-365-9200.
It's the morning tailgate. Where are those sirloins? Being fired up on the queue right now, Vinny. Where's that tequila? Where's those drinks? This is the morning tailgate. Sorry. Vinny, Vince, and Clay.
Having some trouble with my headphones.
Come on, Vinny.
Tequila right in the coffee. Can't taste it. It's beautiful.
Yes.
A non-transparent cup.
Got a long day ahead of me, you guys. It's weird. We're already in game week schedule now. You know,
it's
just
great.
Everything just sort of changes over. Today is the off day, obviously.
Yeah, it feels
like
good.
You talked about
off day, but a lot to do today. A lot to get done today.
Yeah.
You know, Davante Adams had the day off, but he was working. He was talking.
His,
he was on
his night job.
His
second job.
He does have a second job now, right, Clay?
No doubt.
Davante Adams now going to be appearing on the Kay Adams Show, Up in Adams, every Tuesday? A regular every Tuesday. So just more content for us, which is always great.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's probably good news for Devontae. He's a businessman of all sorts. But interesting because Kay Adams pretty bluntly started the show saying, you know, fourth and one.
Yeah.
You know, Devontae was asked after the game what he thought about the fourth and one. He gave the answer of, you know, it's not my job. I'm not the one to make those decisions. But he was asked again and gave a lengthier answer on the Kay Adams show.
Coming on the show, you're my favorite player, so I'm watching this game, right? And me and everybody else, fourth and one, fourth quarter, I'm watching this punt team go out there. I know it was on my mind. What was going through your head? Because that I don't know that ever happened to you in Green Bay.
Yeah, well, it did. I can think of one specific one, but not to dwell on the past. Obviously, the competitor in me is wanting to go for that. But, you know, like I said after the game, my job is to go out there and run routes and catch the ball when I'm called on. And if the head coach has a hunch or a feeling about something based off, you know, I'm sure the way the game has been going, it's tough to, you know, when the punt team's running out there to try to challenge them on that. You know, we definitely – it's a very open line of communication between, you know, the head coach and really the whole team, but, you know, especially me. So it's something that we can talk about for sure and try to, you know, him get a gauge on how I feel about it. But
yeah.
In the moment, I think that's what he was feeling. And, you know, I definitely wasn't going to challenge it.
So there you go. I don't think anything too, oh, my goodness, type answer. But, look, I think it was on the minds of just about
By the everybody. Way, he was referring to the NFC Championship game. Matt LaFleur decided to kick a field goal rather than go for it on fourth down against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Packers ultimately lost that game, which was they had everything there for them. They were going to the Super Bowl. I don't think any of us thought anything otherwise. In Green Bay, they're getting the warm weather. Tom Brady-led Buccaneers in Lambeau Field. That was a game that was supposed to be a coronation. They were going to the Super Bowl, and they decided to kick the field goal, and it kind of cost them. So he's like, as you said, I could think of one real quickly right now that I could go to that happened in Green Bay. I mean, obviously the competitor in him wanted to go for it on fourth down in L.A.
Look, I think if you ask any player on the team, that's the answer they're going to give you. They're the ones playing. They're like, yeah, let's go for it.
I think
Everybody in the stands, everybody watching on the TV, yeah. I mean, saying let's go for it.
In the press box, it was like, you know, again, they hadn't been over that side of the field very often during the game. They'd been to the red zone just one time, Vince. You know, the I know it's you want to be confident in your defense that they're going to stop them, but even if you stop them and they punt the ball, what are the chances that you're going to get back to that side of the field anyway, as much as a struggle as it was throughout the game to do that? I think, what's that old saying, smoke them if you got them, you're there. Just go for it, and if you feel comfortable that your defense is going to be able to get the ball back to you at the 8-yard line, you ought to feel pretty comfortable that they're going to be able to get the ball back to you even at the 43-yard line. You know, you just have to go longer on a punt. So I think in retrospect, Antonio would do that differently. But as Jason said, and as Antonio pointed out, we tried to do it earlier in the game and it didn't work out. So you know that somewhere in his mind. And everyone else that was advising me on that call remembered what happened earlier in the game.
Yeah, I don't know if he'd do it different. He did double down Monday saying he stands by what he did. So we'll see. Plenty more here on the Morning Take.